this week, we're meeting a coffee roaster who's having a go at using a waste product from the coffee cherry to make a slightly different brew. We'll find out what led an inner-city vegetarian environmental scientist to become a beef farmer of all things, and we'll discover how a farming couple is harnessing the power of worms to improve their paddocks. They're feeding the worms compost and manure and sitting back and watching as they produce a powerful natural fertiliser.
They turn it into the most amazing, sticky, dark, dark, almost black, moist material. It's just magic stuff. So this will sit here in situ for a couple of years. We might give it a little bit of attention, but as far as another livestock on the farm, they're pretty low maintenance. We might have to give them a drink every now and again and maybe a little bit of fresh poo, but other than that, they'll be pretty happy to live up here.
Definitely a low-maintenance type of livestock. We'll meet those farmers who are finding success by introducing worms into their grazing system. That's coming up. First today, we're catching up with a retired farmer who's using his guitar and his friendly border collie to brighten the days of residents of an aged care facility in his hometown.
Singing and playing guitar started as a childhood hobby for Howard Owens.
There's a track winding back to an old-fashioned shack.
But now the retired farmer is making it his full-time passion. And he has a receptive audience here at an aged care facility in his hometown of Manjimup in southern Western Australia.
I'm a volunteer at Munya, which is Baptist Care's aged care centre in Manjimup. I volunteer to bring along my fluffy black and white border collie dog as a therapy dog. She doesn't have any qualifications, just that she likes to wag her tail and demand to be patted, which is all you need for a therapy dog.
Hello, I'm Ellie Honeybone. I'm watching on as Howard, accompanied by his faithful four-legged companion Kip, entertains the residents here.
I've been coming to Munya for the last 3.5 years, I guess. I'm originally from Manjimup, went away to work for 40 years, and I'm back again. And I come here to just brighten up the lives of the people here, I guess. I play a bit of music, bring the dog along. And a lot of the people here I do know, because they were either friends of my parents or, in fact, parents of people I went to school with. So it's nice to give something back to the place where you grew up.
What about music? How did you get into playing guitar and singing?
Well, I learnt to play guitar at the local school, actually, when I was 15 or 16, and went away and did various other things, but never really put it away. And then in recent times I've been playing it a bit more. I play along with a couple of mates in town as well. We've done the odd open mic night, but generally it's for my own entertainment, really. And so I wouldn't say I'm the best singer in the world, but I do tinkle along, and people can generally work out what tune I'm playing. Unfortunately, the dog is not that keen on me singing, so she gets a bit bored with that. In fact, right now she's thinking I'm about to break into song now.
tell us about Kit. What are her special talents, and what is she like when she comes here?
Well, Kip looks forward to coming along here. I let her pretty well have her head coming in, and she turns at the right spot there, and then waits at the entrance and waits at the front counter and demands a biscuit or whatever that they've got for her there. And when we come in, then she knows exactly where to go, and isn't always the same people she'll come up to, and she's very friendly. She looks people in the eye, which is not all that common for dogs. She looks them in the eye, sits down, puts her head on their knee, demands to be patted, and then the tail starts going, and she's made a friend. And oftentimes I'll be here, there'll be someone who'll be sitting at a table and not really, they're sort of half asleep perhaps, and not really communicating, but the dog comes in and does all that, and next thing you know, we've got a conversation going about dogs they've owned, farms they've lived on, all the other things that go with it. So she's a great conversation icebreaker and starter. So that's her main skill. She's also very good with her nose. She can find stuff. And so at times I'll put a few treats out on the floor and then send her to go and find them all. And yeah, the residents think that's pretty funny.
And I suppose you touched on it there, but yeah, you get a good reaction from bringing her, and you think it's important these residents get some animal time.
I think it's also from the staff. They're the ones that make the biggest fuss of her. But yes, many people that are in aged care have had to give up an animal, and so that's one of the things that they really really miss. And so to have a friendly dog, I mean, a little small lap dog is not everyone's cup of tea. If you come from a farm, you probably had a dog something like this, and they are quite communicative with their owners. She's telling me right now that it's enough time for talking, we need to go and visit some people right now actually.
Karen Jarling, we've got this big swathe of dried hay that's been rolled out in front of us here in the paddock. What's this all about?
It looks like hay, Jen, but it's actually a lasagna, a worm lasagna. It's a layer of spent hay, the way it looks, but it's also got mushroom compost in there, some aged wood chip, a little bit of cow and horse poo, some rock minerals for a treat, and then we top it off with some more hay to protect the worms.
This smelly mix of manure and mushroom compost covered in mulch that Karen Jarling likes to call worm lasagna is a way of naturally fertilising the land.
They turn it into the most amazing, sticky, dark, almost black, moist material. It's just magic stuff. So this will sit here in situ for a couple of years. We might give it a little bit of attention, but as far as another livestock on the farm, they're pretty low maintenance. We might have to give them a drink every now and again and maybe a little bit of fresh poo, but other than that, they'll be pretty happy to live up here.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Nichols. I'm here with Karen at her property at Glastonbury near Gympie in southeast Queensland, where she and her husband Warren McEwen run a beef operation, CGL Beef. This lasagna mix, which is just one of the low-cost solutions that Karen and Warren are using to improve soil and productivity here, is harnessing the power of worms.
There we go. And they're quite fat too. And a worm eats his own body weight in food every day, and they will double their population in 6 weeks. And they're hiding to get away from the bright light of the sunlight. We don't like that.
So you've got a worm farm out in the open. I've never seen this done before. Where did you get the worms from, or do they just come naturally from the soil? How does it work?
No, these are composting worms. They're different to your earthworms. And I've been spying on works that other people are doing. There's some activity like this down in Victoria, in New South Wales, but overseas as well. We will probably have to tarp these this big worm bed to keep enough moisture in, but we've timed this. It's been sort of ready to go, but we've been waiting for the moisture. So it's been rained on now quite a bit, and that's okay. But if we hit a really hot, dry spell, we'll put a tarp over it to hold the moisture in, because worms don't like to be dry. A worm will eat whatever fits into its mouth. It doesn't need anything in particular. They love animal manure, but if you give them only animal manure, they can produce high percentage bacterial vermicast, and you want a bit of a balance. So that's why they've got a little bit of that and a little bit of the other as well.
And when you say vermicast, it's basically worm poo.
Well, it is worm poo and worm wee, but it's also magic stuff, which is why we've put this in place up here on the very crest of the hill, so that eventually that goodness will gravity feed down and help reignite biological activity downslope.
So this is like a natural fertiliser.
Absolutely, but it's also going to increase the water holding capacity of the soil at this spot. The fertility and the water holding capacity of the soil within about 100 metre radius of this will increase. It wicks out through the soil. So it's quite an amazing feat that our soils can do. It can go uphill. Majority will go down, but we don't want to go outside the fence, so we've come away from the fence a little bit. And we'll concentrate on our patch of turf.
Oh, it's so fascinating. Now, it's been a few years since I've been out on site here with you, Karen Jarling, and you and your husband, Warren McEwen, have been very, very busy indeed. Now, you produce beef, and at the right time of year, poultry meat for your direct customers. How has business been going?
Business has been really good. Gympie has grown exponentially in the last sort of 2 years, and we're seeing a really engaged new population here. So we've seen a lot of our local customers new to the area find us and start to support us. But we still have a lot of customers who've been with us for 5 and 6 years, which is a lovely thing to do. You get to hear about their families. But then the new people who've come to our area, they bring such energy and excitement that they've found this new place, and I'm like, it's great, but I don't recognise my hometown so much anymore. But it's still been really positive. Our customers are lovely people.
And you've held this workshop on your property, some 60 people registered to attend. That's just incredible and shows the interest in regenerative farming.
Absolutely. We thought, 30 might be great, but we topped that in the first few days. People are so keen to come along and look at a lot of simple methods that can be implemented to improve their farms. It's just great.
What are some of the things you're proudest of? You do a lot of moving of cattle across the land, pasture rotation, so that you're not flogging the land in one place. You hit it hard and then move them on.
Absolutely. Everything moves on this place. Our meat chickens move, our cattle move, our horses are usually in with our cows. So they're in one mob, essentially. So we only ever have a tiny portion of the property with animal impact at any one time. Just at the moment, we've got baby calves being born, so we've separated the horses out. And that means that 99% of the farm is in a resting or recovering position at all times.
And in the few years that you've been here, how have you noticed that the land's been responding to what you've been doing?
It's phenomenal. It's 4 years. It's 4 years, 3 days before Christmas this year that we've moved in here. And we had soil tests done earlier this year in May, and we've grown our soil carbon by a full 0.5%, which sounds tiny. But when you're talking about soil carbon, that means we're holding approximately an extra 70,000 litres of water per hectare in the soil. And given that we've done that in the driest 3 consecutive years in the last 37 years, according to our neighbours' records, we're pretty impressed with that, because we're not qualified experts, but we're following the best practices from around the world and learning from other people all the time, tapping into amazing networks, and it works. If you just do it, it works.
Karen Jarling, a farmer near Gympie in southeast Queensland. She spoke to reporter Jennifer Nichols. Before that, Ellie Honeybone introduced us to Howard Owens, who's entertaining the residents of an aged care facility in Manjimup in southern Western Australia with the help of his dog, Kip. You can see more on that story, including photos of Howard and Kip, if you head to the RN website, abc.net.au/RN, and look for Country Breakfast under the Programs tab. I'm Clint Jasper with you on RN. Still to come, how a taste of farm life changed a former city slicker's perspective on food production, and could a tea made from discarded coffee cherry husks that's been drunk for centuries in other countries catch on here?
At this coffee processing shed in the Byron hinterland of northern New South Wales, Rodney Contajohn is collecting a waste product that he's hoping to put to good use.
So it's called cascara. It's the red cherry and the mucilage from what they discard from when they clean in the cleaning process, which most people used to just use it as compost back onto the ground again.
Hello, I'm Kim Honan, and I've met up with Rodney, who's a coffee roaster, but today he's rescuing the discarded husks from locally grown coffee cherries to make a slightly different brew.
I've done a bit of research and found out through other people that have done this overseas that you can actually produce a nice drinking tea out of it. There's also been stories of, because it's quite high in sugar, so it ferments. People have made liqueurs out of it. People have made sorbets out of it. And cooking and things like that, because it contains a quarter of the amount of caffeine that coffee does, apparently, and it also has quite a high sugar content, so it becomes very, very sweet and nice to drink. And as a tea, it's very cleansing to the mouth. It opens up your pores, it cleanses your mouth, it's one of those products that needs a bit more research, but it's a really good byproduct.
Well, we're having a bit of a taste test at the moment, and it does have a lot of hints of lemon in it.
Yeah. Well, the thing with that is it's funny because coffee all around the world has different flavours, and even in different areas of the same place. I have used cascara from another farm in this local area that has different qualities in it. It's a bit more woodier, a bit more, how would you say, a bit more berry woody flavours. But this one here has a lot more citrusy wooden flavours. So it depends on the areas they grow in, the beans themselves. Depends on what sort of flavours come out of that bean to what sort of flavours going to come into the cascara. Or vice versa, actually. The flavour in the cascara goes into the bean as well.
The word cascara is Spanish for skin or peel, and while it's been produced in overseas coffee countries for centuries, it's a relatively new idea here. But Rodney Contajohn is hoping, with the right marketing, Australians could get a taste for the drink, which is high in antioxidants.
There is no demand for it in Australia because it's such a new product. And what it'll take something that will come out, be marketed really, really well, until it drives that sort of want. You'll need a lot of roasters from around Australia itself to be hitting farmers in the areas. Well, the two major areas are going to be the hinterland here and the tablelands and Cairns. So you'll need a lot of local roasters to hit them up to get the cascara. The roasters working with the farmers more or less to get that product.
And is your product ready and being sold locally yet, or has it got a bit more trialing to go?
Got a lot of trialing to do. So what we are tasting now is my first real trial of a method and of a recipe to do. So it's going to take a little bit more because it's such a time-consuming product to prep and get ready. Takes that lot of time, and that's what will be one of the holdups for a lot of roasters. They won't have the manpower all the time to do it. So it's for me. I think what happened was I got probably maybe 25 kilos from Joss a week ago. So I've processed most of it, and I'll probably get 5 kilos out of it of product I can use, which is all dried. And it's taken me I'd estimate by the end of the process, 40 hours of labour. So it's a quite a time-consuming product to do. But this is me doing it all by hand.
And so given it's so time-consuming, you would be hoping for a premium price for it?
Well, I think you can't really push for a premium price until you get a premium product. And that's where the whole recipes come into it, what you're going to use it for, and what sort of setting are you going to use it for. Are you going to use it for a hot tea? Are you going to use it for a cold drink, on ice? These are the things that you've got to work out, what sort of process you want to use and how you want to use it. It's such a, as I said, such a virgin product that you've got to start off from the ground floor. There'd be probably roasters around the world, in America and Europe and things like that, they're probably halfway through this process and probably done it all. But because of Australia, how young we are, with everything we do, this is a real beginning.
Has there been much research done into the health benefits of it?
I know that it is quite high in antioxidants, as coffee is high, but the cascara is higher because of the lessening effect of caffeine in it. From what I've read so far, there's a quarter of the amount of caffeine in cascara than there is in coffee itself. Because of the organic nature of our cascara around here, because the fact is we use minimal amounts of sprays if we do use spray itself, which that in itself means it's a natural product, which is quite a one-off.
For Sky Douglas, it's been a journey from inner city environmental scientist to beef farmer.
They're all black Angus cross, so some are the what they call the baldy face. So you'll get the white faces with the black bodies. That's the Hereford black Angus cross. Yeah, and we've got a mix of cows and young steers and heifers, and I think I saw a calf somewhere.
Hello, I'm Brad Marcellus. I'm visiting Sky at this property at the foothills of the Bunya Mountains in southeast Queensland, where she and her husband raise and finish grass-fed cattle.
When we say grass-fed cattle, we mean grass-fed and finished, so that's 100% on a pasture diet.
some people will say grass-fed and they'll supplement the feed with grains or other additives, but our cattle get 100% grass-fed. They do get a molasses lick if they want it. It's on offer and they do like it.
What's the flavour difference in the meat?
Grass-fed cattle takes a bit longer to mature, to get to size, so typically it's a bit more intense. It's a bit more of a beefier flavour, if you like. Yeah, so it does have more flavour than other cattle, I believe.
For Skye, who grew up in the city and was a vegetarian, meeting a husband, moving to the country and getting involved in a farming life has changed her perspective on food production.
So my husband's family were some of the first settlers in Blackbutt, and they were always graziers, pastoralists. I met my husband in, 25 years ago now. He always, I think, intended to be here. I didn't know that we were going to do that. When we came here and started to have children, what the main thing for me was that my son had food allergies, and I found it really hard to find really good quality food. As well as that, when I met my husband, I was vegetarian, so I had a real...
No way! And you're environmental scientist as well, vegetarian, and now beef farming.
So, interesting turn of events, but it was really important to me that animals are treated really well, and that, you know, I didn't understand that. I grew up in the city, so my perspective has changed over time. And in getting to see how the animals are treated and what a fabulous life they have here. And then my children were, you know, my son had some food allergies. We've got allergies and anaphylaxis in the family. And so I was trying to go back to grassroots healthy food for my family. The more I learnt, the more I realised that, you know, there's additives to even meat. When you buy meat, you think that there's not really much that can be done to it. But I know there's things that can be added and ways that can be made palatable when it shouldn't be. So I wanted to eat our beef, and the way I thought we could afford for me to eat our beef and our family to eat our beef was to offer it for sale to other people. And so that's where we started.
What's good about this life?
It's fabulous for the kids. You know, we've got chooks and dogs and cats, and they've got all the space they need to run around, fresh air. It feels good. And as well as that, you know, we developed a really good relationship with our customers, mainly in Brisbane and locally here. You know, those relationships are really special. I really love being able to talk to people about what we do, and they have questions and we can answer them. But I definitely feel that people have a real interest in what they're eating, want to know their farmer, so they're really keen to, you know, we have open days here as well. We haven't had one since COVID, so it's kind of held everything up, but we're planning to have another one again soon. And those days are really successful because we get customers out. They can ask, they can look at the cattle, they can ask about the cattle. We do a bit of a hay ride around the block and have a barbecue. And so it's a really lovely day. And customers connecting with each other as well. I think that's really nice because they've all got sort of that common interest in their food and where it comes from. And I like the idea of having a bit of a community around food. I think it's so important.
With that community around food, what do you think that brings? A firm understanding of what people are eating? Just an appreciation of what they're paying even?
Yes, some education around what it takes to get a steak on your plate.
People are always looking for the bargain, you know, and supermarkets celebrate, this is the cheapest price. Is cheap good?
well, no, I wouldn't say, I don't look at that anymore. Yeah. And maybe that was something that when I was younger might have been a consideration, but I think that, you know, with education you come to understand that the quality is what you're looking for. So, you know, maybe you decide you're not going to eat so much meat and you eat just quality meat, that's good too. So I feel like there's definitely an education around the time that things take. You know, good food is slow as far as I can understand, and so, you know, our animals take longer than if they're in a feedlot to mature, to get to the age, but that's good too. You know, in that time they're moving about and they're, you know, hanging out with their mob, and it's a good thing. So
what's the best way of eating your pasture raised beef, Skye?
Oh, here we go. My kids love slow-cooked brisket or spare ribs. That's sort of a favourite here. A lot of my customers talk about how good our mince is because it's... And, I mean, mince should be just minced steak, you know, minced trim and steak. I don't know what they do to it to make it terrible in the supermarkets, but that's something that people always comment about, how great our mince is. And our sausages... And they're just a simple sausage, so they're not anything special really, but they are just predominantly meat in the sausage, and I think that's the difference. We love steak.
But on the barbecue?
Yeah, just on the barbecue. My favourite's a rib fillet, but you know, you can't really beat that, can you?
No. So vegetarian, city girl, now farming. Will you ever be able to go back? Could you go back to the city?
It'd be hard. It'd be really hard. When we do go on holidays or whatever, the closeness of the houses and the hemmed-in-ness of everything feels a bit much.
And not knowing what you're eating as well.
Well, yeah, I couldn't do that. We'd still have to... we'd have to find our own farmer to support us. Yeah, that's right.
Skye Douglas, who these days is enjoying farm life in Queensland's South Burnett region, where she spoke to Brad Marcellus. Before that, Kim Honan introduced us to coffee roaster Rodney Contagion, who's using discarded husks from coffee cherries to make a tea called cascara. You can read more on that story and all of today's stories on the RN homepage. You'll find Country Breakfast under the Programs tab.